AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Oh my goodness. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another podcast, another discussion about a person who's involved in independent music, cares about it deeply, is creating it. And this person, of course, embodies all of those qualities because he's played in more bands than you can probably shake a stick at. But his name, and this is one of my favorite last names to say in independent music, and that's straight up not hyperbole, David Wagonshoots. He is the drummer for his newest band called Crossed Keys, and I'll tell you more about them in a moment. But he also played in Kid Dynamite, Lifetime, Ink and Dagger. The list could go on, but we discuss all of that. And he's an incredibly open person and is very just honest about his approach to music, playing drums. And I loved this discussion because, frankly, most of the bands that he has existed in, I have loved in some way, shape, or form. So when the opportunity came across my desk, I snapped it up. But let's talk about some other things. I just went out to LDB Fest in Louisville, Kentucky, and boy, oh boy, that was quite an awesome festival. If you are not familiar, it's been, you know, plugging along for 10 plus years. This year was actually their 10-year anniversary. And I got invited to do some live podcasts out there, which was extremely fun. I had only done that once before over in the UK at Outbreak Festival. And I was like, well, let's try this in the States, see how this goes. And even though the setup was a little bit different than what I had experienced at Outbreak, where it was like I was right next to the merchandise, so there was a lot of milling about and a lot of people kind of coming and going, which, you know, was cool. This one was definitely more, you know, kind of in the corner slash sectioned off, which was totally fine. But at the same time, there were some people who were just had no idea what the heck was going on. But once people started to find out about it, by the time that, you know, I was done with my chats on Saturday, it was a 2-day festival, Friday and Saturday, there was a good, you know, like 40, 50 people showing up at each one. And it was really, really fun. And honestly, the bands and my guests had a really fun time as well. So I'll be releasing some of those conversations over the next couple of weeks to highlight the amazingness that was LDB Festival. So big shout out to them for bringing me out and partnering up with me on that. It was extremely fun. And just to give you a list of some of the bands that I discussed and had live podcasts there: Knocked Loose, Dying Wish, Pain of Truth, Spy, Tsunami. And there's basically, I had 9 conversations. It was really, really good. So I'll be releasing those, like I said, over the next couple of weeks. And it's a different flavor than the sort of quote unquote normal podcast that I do here. So anyways, huge shout out LDB Fest. And I can't wait to do it again next year because they hinted that that would probably be the case. So That's what I got. You can always email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you are looking to support the show for free, costs you $0, maybe 30 seconds of your time, you can go into the Apple Podcast page, drop a star rating and review. The review will take you maybe a minute. You just type in a few words like, hey, this thing is cool, and then submit, boom, done, moving about your day. And then on Spotify, if you leave a rating, that helps the algorithm catch and then obviously introduce this show to people who need to be listening to it, because that's what we all are a part of, the algorithm, as it were. And I want to tell you about Crossed Keys, which is Dave Wagonshoot's new band. Their new full-length, or their debut full-length, it's called Believes in You, and it's out on May 5th on Dead Satellite Records, Creep Records, and Sell the Heart Records. Talk about a three-way split. How about that? The presale is up at deadsatellite records.com, and they're also playing a really cool festival called Sing Us Home in Maniuk, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, is in New Jersey. It's on May 5th and 6th. You can obviously figure that out on all of the appropriate socials for Crossed Keys, who are a really good band. But yeah, let's talk about our conversation with David. It was great, and he talks a lot about 90s touring and all of these other interesting things that I decided to focus in on. But first, before we talk to David, I want to tell you about my favorite record label around right now. That is iodinerecords.com. Go to their website, or obviously the record label is not called iodinerecords.com. It's just called Iodine Records. I'll be doing a special project with them coming up in the next, I don't know, a couple months or so. I just need to finally finish it. But they have a really cool pre-order up right now from a band called Jerome's Dream, who I had Eric, the drummer, on, I don't know, maybe 2 years or so ago. But Jerome's Dream, great sort of screamo, post-hardcore, whatever you want to call it. But they have their new full-length that's up for pre-order. They also recently reissued Quicksand's seminal record, Slip. It is the 30th anniversary, if I am not mistaken. They also did this really cool book, and yeah, it's just amazing. So you can go to iodinerecords.com, find out all about this label and all the cool bands. They're reissuing stuff. They're supporting new bands. They're helping bands that have maybe been a little dormant kind of get a little shot of life and a reason to get out there. So iodinerecords.com. And now, here's my discussion with Mr. Dave Wagonshoot. I first witnessed you playing drums in Kid Dynamite, even though I was obviously aware at that point of Lifetime and Ink and Dagger and everything. But once you guys started to come out to California pretty regularly, you know, I saw you multiple times, but was always impressed with your energy and how kind of manic of a drummer you were and are still. And the thing was, is that I felt like your energy always matched what the band was trying to accomplish, like whoever you played with. But it was always at that level of like, all right, you're going to get, you know, all of me. You're going to get me, you know, playing fast, playing manic, whatever's needed for that particular band. It seemed like that is kind of your mode in general as far as playing drums is concerned. Am I incorrect about that statement, or do you feel like it rings true?
Yeah, I think that's just my mode in general, like, period. I think that, you know, each decade has served a different level at which it can get to at different times, but it's, yeah, I don't like, control is tough for me, if you will, and so of all the bands I've played in, you know, the one band other than my current, I would say, is like, when I ended up in good riddance, when I fell backwards into Good Riddance, that was like a band where I actually had to be conscious to not be a complete and total maniac, because of they were trying to deliver musically. Not that I was reserved or anything, but I had to, like, it was the first band I ever put shoes on to play drums.
Right.
Good Riddance. Cause I was like, oh, this is a little bit of a different approach here. I need to, you actually care what I do with my kick pedal. Like I'm a musician. Sure. Am I schooled? Nah. But honestly, it's, you know, halfway through, the decades of me playing, I finally had somebody tap me on the shoulder and say, you know, what the lyrics are doing kind of matter, and what the bass guitar kind of does matters. And so I kind of had to like relearn my instrument, and it put me in a different gear for a little while, which is a good thing, right? It expanded my awareness of like songwriting and allowed me to find a different gear. Still manic a little bit, but not like Kid Dynamite or Ink and Dagger, like just out of control, like, you know, these drums are against me and I'm going to take care of business. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm either supercharged or asleep. You know, that's kind of how I live my life.
Right. Yeah. You're at a 10 or a zero, either or.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately for my family members, I'm at a 10 or a zero. So, and my bandmates.
Right. Right. But I think what you described in regards to once you started to work with Good Riddance, where like clearly you were stepping into something that had already been established, and there was that idea that you needed to mold yourself into something that could serve that band at that juncture, as opposed to you trying to, you know, fit them to fit your mold. It's like you understood where it's like, oh yeah, this is what I'm coming in to do.
Yeah. I didn't consciously know that at first. Right. It kind of grew on me over my time with the band. Like I said, in learning the records and learning them at the speed of the records, trying shoes on, playing with them, recognizing they weren't playing things quite as fast as on the record in some cases. And then really when I got into the studio, the Blasting Room, was when I kind of got that, like, I got that perspective of, oh, everybody doesn't have to adapt to what I'm doing. I need to be of a piece, you know, with the band. And that was great. And that was just wonderful. And I carry that with me today, right? I still float between the manic, and I probably lean more towards the understanding of the whole, right? I have a better appreciation for the whole of the music than I do of just letting go. So,
right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up the no shoe thing, because that was definitely something I noticed in regards to you, you know, playing drums. Where was that? Just you had always played like that, so it was a matter of just like, oh yeah, like of course I'm going to play, you know, drums without my shoes on, because that's what I've always done in every band ever since I started.
Yeah, I think once I got a kit, it just. I mean, I think when I first got a kit, I was like, I had like drum gloves and wrestling shoes, because that's what Tommy Lee had.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, okay, I need to have wrestling shoes. But wrestling shoes were, and until any wrestlers out there, but like they're relatively soft soled versus what I ended up moving into, which was like a hard sole, like a Vans or like a Doc shoe, something that I guess gave me more control of precision. And some drummers would laugh at that and say, well, bare feet does that more. It just, yeah, that's just, I was born with bare feet. Right.
Right.
I played drums with bare feet. My children try to go out of the house in the winter with bare feet. Sometimes they do. I once had a kid leave the house with one flip flop and one sneaker. And I was like, what are you doing? They're like, what do you mean? And I was hold with it, because you know it is what it is. So but yeah, I played bare feet because it's just what I did. I remember Eames played bare feet for the longest time.
Yep.
Dan Eamon played guitar bare feet. I don't know what he's at these days. We just played a house show with our new band a couple weeks ago, and we were definitely both had shoes on.
Right.
On stage, if you will, or in the living room, if you will.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't know if he had an accident, you know, he's got a fungus or what, but like,
right. You
know, it's shoes in 2023 for me.
Understood. Understood. We'll pick apart some of those other, things a little bit later, but I wanted to focus on you as a person. I know that you were born and raised in the Detroit area. What did your family structure look like growing up? Like mom and dad in the house? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, one mom, one dad, a younger brother, 4.5 years. And so I was born in Detroit and we grew up in suburbia in Troy, Michigan. And yeah, it was the four of us, you know, put it on the postcard. I mean, I guess for a while there probably looked like a postcard if you.
Right. Sorry, I was caught up a little bit. So
no, that's okay.
As you were, as you started to, you know, grow a little bit older and understand who you were as a person, you know, did you care about school? Like, what was your, you know, thing as you were growing up? Was it sports? I mean, this is obviously prior to you getting into music. What did you find yourself getting into?
Yeah, I was definitely had excess energy, right? And so I played a lot of sports as growing up as a kid. I played, I guess, all of the sports except ice hockey. I played basketball and football and baseball, soccer, as we call it here in the States. I played all those things. I loved all those things. I found myself, I wonder what year it was. Trying to think about like related to the albums, but you know, eventually I was always into, like, I grew up playing sports, and my family was an athletic family. So mom and dad did triathlons. Dad taught, like aerobics at the YMCA. So we were like the YMCA family. We do the slush runs and all that stuff. And so we had all that athleticism stuff. And, you know, long before, you know, anybody knew what ADHD was, I was the excited one, right? And so they're always looking for an outlet for me, I suppose. And I was always into music. There was always music in the house, whether it be, you know, the Beatles or whether it be disco, because my dad taught a lot of aerobics, and so there was always some form of music. And I think it was probably fifth grade when they were like, let's try band to try to channel some of this excess energy. And so I got the snare drum, joined the band. And shortly after that, I left the band, like by sixth grade, because I was like, I didn't like the construct of, I didn't like the instruction piece. I didn't like, not that I didn't like self-learning the drums. I just didn't like the, you know, I don't know. Band wasn't for me. So I played in band for like a year. I took like 3 drum lessons. Even that was kind of like, ugh. And then I just self-taught. And then I started to get into more, I started to be drawn to an element that had like, you know, a little bit more of a, I don't want to, what's the Rage Against the Machine line? Yeah. You got cursing on your podcast? How do we work this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. F you, I won't do what you tell me. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So I started to lean a little bit more into that. And obviously they weren't around at that time, but you know, I think my first, foray into that was like the heavy metal scene that was coming up in like Southern California. Right. So I got like really into Motley Crue around the Shout at the Devil era. I can remember getting that record. Yeah, and then and still playing sports at the time, right? Like I wore my Iron Maiden headband while I was playing soccer and stuff. So I kind of like gravitated from sports into like metal, and then found punk rock stuff through metalheads that like punk bands. You know, it's probably a cliche to say that like James Hetfield wore a Misfits shirt, and I was like, tell me about that.
Yep.
You know, because that's more raw. And that's kind of where I landed, like, you know, musical wise. And that's why I said, like, you know, two parents, a brother, the postcard, you know, it probably looked like the postcard for a little while there. And then as you could see, like the postcard changed where my hair got longer and the clothes got darker.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I was like, you know, I was not Wednesday Addams or anything, but like, you know, that's just how, you know, that was my journey into music and hanging out with the older kids, because they skated and they played music. And, you know, I was just fascinated with anything other than what I was given, if you will, anything other than what was right in front of me. I wanted out of that and into something else.
Hey there, you care about band merch, and so do I, and that is why I love partnering up with rockabilia.com. They have something really cool going on right now. Husker Du is releasing a new record on April 22nd. They have a pre-order right now. You know, they are from Minneapolis, so they want to support the hometown heroes of Husker Du. But go to rockabilia.com. You can check out this and all of the other officially licensed band merch. But most importantly, use this promo code 100 words or less. That gets you 10% off of your entire order. You'll be able to buy some stuff for you, your family, your friends, everything else. Ships from the Midwest. And I just love this company. So go get lost on their website in the best way possible. And, you know, buy some Beatles merch, some Black Sabbath stuff. How about a Grateful Dead shirt for your, you know, aunt or uncle? There's so much stuff at their website. I encourage you to check it out and see what they have for you and your family and friends. Again, 100 words or less is the promo code, 10% off your entire order. Thank you, as always, Rockabilia.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. In my late teens, early 20s, I was burning the candle at both ends, like playing in a band, going to shows like almost every single night of the week. And I had friends and family being like, yo, you should chill out. Like, you know, you're just not only exhausted, but not giving the best version of yourself to me, to others, to people I was in relationships with. And I wish that someone would have been like, you know what? Hey, you should think about therapy, because I did that later on in life and it helped out tremendously. That is why I love working with BetterHelp. If you are thinking about giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is an amazing on-ramp for this. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And if you do not vibe with the therapist for whatever reason, you can switch it at no additional charge. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and boom, you're off and running. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ray.
There's always that element, like, especially when you find this secret society of subculture and you start to see all these interesting things you've never seen before, you know, and not everybody dives into it head first, but, you know, for people that have the proclivity, like, you know, people like yourself and myself do, it just, yeah, you're like, there's no end to it. You're like, okay, now that I found this, there's probably something else. Like, let's keep going. Let's keep digging. And then, yeah, you just end up getting swallowed by it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Not eaten alive.
Right.
But definitely engulfed in it. I mean, yeah, for sure.
What was your, as you were going down this rabbit hole, how did your parents and, you know, peers react to it? Was it one of those things where it's like, dude, Dave's getting into some weird stuff, like we're concerned about him? Or was it just like, all right, well, I guess he's into this, so we'll try to, you know, deal with him. How did that transpire?
I mean, they were supportive to an extent, right? Like the drumming thing. If your parents let you play drums in your own house, like,
yeah, that's huge.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. That's a huge thing. So let's just say at the root of it all, if I can set up the drums in the basement and slap on the headphones and play along a Shout of the Devil or Led Zeppelin record or whatever it was that I was bashing along to, and you know, I wasn't tossed out of the house, that was good. My peers, it's funny because I kind of had one foot on each side of the, I don't want to say each side of the tracks, but I kind of did, right? If you want to talk about cliches, like I kept my connection to sports and my, more, you know, if you had the socias and the greasers and the, or the jocks and the nerd, you know, I mean, I kind of had like my foot and like all of the pieces. And so I had a lot of peers, but what I was mostly drawn to was the older crowd. And I suppose my parents were supportive enough until, you know, along the lines of the older crowd. I mean, you know, you're Yeah, I suppose, well, not everybody is. I was going to say you're born straight edge, but like I found my way to alcohol and drugs at a really young age. And some of that probably had to do with the crowd that I was hanging out with. And so my parents weren't, of course, cheerleading that effort of mine to become a full-blown alcoholic by like, you know, 14.
Yep.
They weren't cheerleading, but the sports, the drumming, they're all about it. And then they're like, what's happening to my child? What are you doing? And a lot of my decision making was snap decision making, if
sure,
you will.
Sure. Or terrible, some may say. I'm just kidding.
I mean, right. Well, I was going to say, if you make snap decisions, some might be terrible and some might be, you know, life changing and altering in a good way. But definitely an interesting spot. And then really from, if you want to get back to like support, the idea of supportive, while I was careening towards the brick wall at 85 miles an hour, right, my parents still were like, whether it was supportive or they just didn't know what else to do, but like, you know, they're like, we need to get you some help. And so they did. You know, I spent, I don't know what year it was. I guess it was my freshman or sophomore year in high school. Maybe it was my junior year.
Okay.
Anyway, I kind of got myself, you know, stuck between the laws of the land and my own desire to do things. And my parents, they shipped me off to Minnesota for like 6 weeks to get a little introspection.
Sure.
And then that turned into like 7 months. And that got me on the straight and narrow as far as substance abuse. But I didn't change the course of like the music and the desire to continue to desire to continue to still play like, you know, energetic and very, very passionate music. We just were able to get the narcotics out of the system.
Right.
So still supportive, right? Like that's supportive. Cause if they didn't give a shit, then they wouldn't have, you know, helped me get help.
Yeah. So. Oh yeah. They would have. Yeah. I mean, they would have just been like, well, yeah, send him on his merry way. But I mean, you know, like clearly parents, like you said, that are supportive and, you know, they just want the best for their child and whatever it is that they're passionate about, like they get excited about that. But it's good they had the wherewithal to see like, okay, it's cool that Dave is into this stuff as far as music and, you know, drumming, but the abuse he's doing to himself is not good. So we need to, you know, throw the red flag and send him away for a couple of months in order to understand how this can not benefit his future.
Yeah, totally. Helps you understand how your actions impact everyone else around you, right? I mean,
right.
That's always the case, right? Every decision you make, but got me some good perspective, young in life.
Yeah,
for sure.
Was that when did you actually, because I know you moved to St. Louis, was that like when you went up to Minnesota, was that when you were in St. Louis and then you got set up to Minnesota? Is that correct?
Short version of this would be like we lived in Michigan. I headed over to my little vacation.
Yes.
In Minneapolis and Princeton, Minnesota. Came back to Michigan. Cause that's where the family was still living. I would have been like 10th or 11th grade. It's a little fuzzy. And then we moved to St. Louis as a family. What would have been my senior year of high school. What would have been, I would say that because I didn't necessarily pay attention enough in class to be able to graduate, that coming year. Right. So I was like going to be a senior in Michigan. We happened to move from my dad's job to St. Louis. And I went back to school as a junior again.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, yeah. And then I bounced halfway through my senior year because that's all I needed was like a couple more credits to get, to, you know, to push through. But so,
right.
Yeah, that was like about a year or so after rehabilitation, as they call it.
Yes, the good old rehab. St. Louis has always been such an interesting, because I know that like that's when you really started to probably play in bands in earnest and start to participate in what you would call a scene. St. Louis is such an interesting thing, because I mean, it's like, I know like Dave from Unbroken, and like there were people that were from there, and there was clearly bands happening, but it, like, I would be hard pressed if someone, you know, were to be like, Ray, name a, you know, a band from St. Louis. It was like, I don't know. Like, that's hard. Like, that actually, you know, quote unquote, toured nationally and like broke out and stuff like that. So talk to me about, like, I guess the St. Louis scene as you were experiencing it on the ground.
Yeah. Well, I'll answer that question. If you were to say, Dave, talk to me about a St. Louis band, I would say, well, Ultraman. Ultraman was on New Red Archives.
That's true. Yeah.
And definitely one of my favorite tour names ever. They went to Europe with Sam I Am, if I'm not mistaken, and did a European In Your Pants tour. And
that's pretty, I've never heard that. That's pretty good. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And so here's St. Louis, right? I'm obviously the new guy. I'm like living in the suburbs with my parents, going to the good high school, 'cause they moved to the area where we could get the good education. I'm drawn to downtown and the suburbs of the suburbs. Like, I was right on the cusp, and, there was a punk scene downtown, that obviously way predated my arrival. It's not like I showed up and it started or anything, but what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say, like, I discovered this, the more of the punk scene, I guess you would say it, like, there was a club called 1227 Washington Avenue. And then they would do punk shows on Sundays at the back alley entrance, and they would call that the alley. And so I would go down to the alley to see shows, in the city. And then, I guess, and I don't know how it started, but like, I actually started booking some shows out in the suburbs, beyond where I was, 'cause I was like right on the city line, if I recall right. And then I would book some shows out at a place called Bastille's, which was out in the suburbs. And that's where I started to make the connection to, like the Edgewise guys came through from New Jersey, or, and then Endpoint and, Split Lip came through, at the time. And then as far as like hardcore bands, air quotes here, because we have to have our buckets, right? And some people keep a foot in more than one bucket at a time.
Yep.
You had like Round Two, which was Dave Claiborne's band, and the Shortcut Guys. So there was definitely like a hardcore slash straight edge scene. And there was definitely like a punk scene, and I loved both of them. And I first played more in the punk scene but became friends with Dave and that scene. Yeah. So that was the scene to me, which was like, there were these a little bit older, a little bit more punk folks that I was equally as drawn to as I was kind of the hooded sweatshirt champion wearing, you know, the other stuff. And I think the guys in Endpoint really changed my life, because they towed the line between all of that with Rob's and Duncan's, I mean, really all of them, but like their ethos and their lyrics and their sound and their look slash non-look, if you will. It was just like dudes playing music passionately without, I didn't feel like it, you could easily put them in a single bucket. And so I spent a lot of time between Louisville and St. Louis, in the early 90s, before moving out to the East Coast. So,
yeah, no, let's, I really like the connective tissue that you were able to see and witness and pull through, you know, the Louisville scene, just because that was, I mean, even for a person like me on the West Coast, I always have been inspired and so curious about the Louisville scene, like, not only because there were all these bands doing a lot of different things, but because it grew to a point where it's like, you know, whatever, Split Lip and Chamberlain and Falling Forward could play a show in front of like 800 people. And I'm like, in the Midwest, really? Like, that's crazy. But, you know, that's how big it got at one point. But I like how you're talking about the idea opening up of this, you know, genre agnostic, where it's just like, yeah, like we're a punk or hardcore band. You can loosely describe us as such, but, you know, we can kind of play with any band because, I mean, that was a function of the 90s and stuff, but that really pervades through your entire sort of musical life. Like whatever band you played with, like there, you were pulling elements from all these different things to kind of arrive at your sound.
Totally. 100%. And I definitely played the part, right? Like I had the Halloween costume, the straight edge Halloween costume, or the, you know, I mean, I did tried on a lot of hats. I think ultimately it's all punk to me. It's all just music to me. I really did love the eclecticness of, the shows that I went to and the shows that I played throughout that era. I definitely enjoyed that more than just the Mach 101 bills, if you will. Nothing wrong with that. I just, for me, I was more drawn to a little bit of everything and then sprinkling it in, you know.
Yeah.
Big crossover metal guy.
right.
For sure.
When, because I know when you moved out to New Jersey, it was obviously to play in Lifetime. You got the call from Rob Fish, if I'm not mistaken. And that must have been pretty dramatic in regards to the idea that, like, hey, mom and dad, hey, I'm going to go do this band. And, you know, like, obviously all of the experience that you went through in regards to, you know, rehab and everything like that, were they terrified but also trusting? Like, I mean, clearly you went, so like they obviously, you know, didn't put a boot on your car or anything like that, but how did was that also scary for you?
Yeah, I think that I am not from a will I is this the road to ruin aspect. I think by the time that I had, like I said, graduated early, air quotes, from high school.
Yep. Right.
To be class of 90, ended up getting up at about 90 and a half there, 90 early, you know, whatever. Was working. I had a steady job at Kinko's up there in St. Louis doing my thing. and so I had a job. I had income. And my parents, you know, I never really talked to him about it, but they're like, well, okay, I don't know how old I was. Well, 92 to 20, I guess I would have been about 20. I was born in 71. Why is that math not happening? 20, 21. Here I am, 20 or 21, doesn't matter.
Yep.
And I have a job and a love of music, and St. Louis is, it's still got music, but you know, I had this opportunity to go and try something. And I had a little station wagon. I didn't have a station wagon. I did have, it was Woodside paneling. It was a minivan. And I, you know, dumped all the stuff in there and headed out. And I would say, I can recall during my drive out to the East Coast when it hit me that, like, when I had like that, oh shit moment, you know, like when I had like some bad weather and I was passing some trucks and I was thinking, what am I doing?
Right.
What am I?
This is happening.
I've never met any of these people.
Right.
Yeah. I've never met any of these people. I didn't want to live at home the rest of my life. Like, I just really just, this is what I was going to do. But then I had one of these uh-oh moments, you know, who knows where, or who knows what road, 80 or whatever I was taking out. I don't know at the time. But yeah, I definitely had one of those moments. And then you get into New Jersey and it's like, crazy town, you know, I say this all the time, to you got to go right to make a left, and I just felt like I was in another planet. But then I met Ari and life didn't, you know, there you go, my first true love.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right,
it's just you know, that all went away, and then I, you know, continued to make snap and somewhat poor decisions, you know, the rest of my life, well, at least till 96 or so.
Right.
For the next 4 years, I was a hot mess. But I also, you know, did some records and did some touring, and you know, that's all that That's all that mattered. That's all I lived for anyway. The only reason I worked at Kinko's is so I could buy drumsticks.
Of course, right. You know? Yeah, yeah. Well, and
that's all that mattered.
Right. Well, and run off, you know, flyers for friends, and you know, like you were. I mean, everybody had to have that friend at Kinko's, and you were clearly that one.
Well, once I get out to New Brunswick, yes, I this is being recorded.
This is.
Well, they're not a company anymore.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm kidding. Yeah, yeah. FedEx won't come after you. It's okay.
Is FedEx office gonna come for their? They're gonna want their card.
Yeah, the statute of limitations.
Stuff.
I think we're okay.
Okay, I hope so.
Yeah.
If that's the case, New Jersey PG&E might still be looking for me for an electric bill. So it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure, like, as you started to play those, you know, early Lifetime shows, like, Lifetime, I mean, is a amazing band, regardless of the era. And I think what was so interesting about that, the time that you played with them, was the fact that, like, you guys were clearly in the middle of, like, we're sort of a hardcore band, but we're obviously melodic. And you, there were so many bands of your, you know, peer group, whether it was, like, you know, Chokehold or whatever, any Scott Vogel band you played with, where it was like people loved Lifetime, but then there was a lot of people who were just like, what the hell are these guys? Like, I don't even know. And so I'm sure that was really interesting for you guys to just be like, well, yes, we're playing hardcore shows because we're hardcore kids and we're a hardcore band, but we don't sound like the rest of the bands. Or was it pretty much just like, oh, yeah, whatever. Here's a band called Lifetime. And, you know, like, oh, they're going to release something with New Age. So I guess that's kind of cool.
I think I kind of remember it being a blend of both. I mean, we had like flowers on our shirt.
Right.
And we had the little, you know, the guy with the bags of money that, you know, we just did like Ari wore sweater vests. And, I still really love that early stuff, because of what it, you know, how it sucked me in and what it meant to me and my ability to have some time on that ride, if you will. But yeah, it wasn't the norm. I would say there was a lot of like cross genre bills, and maybe that's just cause we were there doing whatever goofiness. Like you said, we were there. You find people that are like background, no thanks. Or you find people that are like, yes.
Right.
Because
it's different.
What else sounded like that? And I'm like, well, is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know what I mean? Like, geez, Louise.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. And I think of what's a Scowl? They have a really cool logo these days with like a sunflower or something like that. And whenever I see it, it makes me smile. Because I love it, because it's not just another, you know, rinse, lather, and repeat. And it also reminds me of like 1992.
Absolutely.
Where like, okay, we're going to take a Shel Silverstein drawing. Sorry, Shel, is he still alive? Or his family? Strike that from the record. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to take this imagery and this artistry that is definitely not, you know, we're on a label with Mousepiece. I call it a Mousepiece.
Yeah.
Mousepiece.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's fine.
I didn't ever call them Mousepiece. That's, let me rephrase that. Tim, sorry. It just didn't come out right. But what I'm trying to say is like you said, we put this record out on New Age, which at the time had, you know, this, right? These bands, you can't see my hands or what I'm trying to illustrate with my hands, of course, but like, you know, it had a sound.
Yep.
And then here's us. But that's what was so great about those shows. The Middlesex County College, which did shows in the early 90s, they'd have these huge bills and they would be eclectic. And it was just, that was it, man. Those were the times.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That was the spot.
Absolutely. And plus, yeah. to your point too, that so much of what was happening was clearly undefined, where yes, there were, you know, the old school hardcore bands that were carrying the torch from what had happened in the late 80s, but there was this element of experimentation with, you know, proto emo or whatever you want to call it. But everybody played together because that was what you did, because there was no other choice. It wasn't like you were going to play with, you know, traditional rock bands or whatever, because you were more akin to that. But yeah, you were able to just kind of see how people reacted to you.
Yeah. I mean, that was the scene. Just think of Louisville, like all those, you know what I mean? You had the Endpoint and you had Undermine and King Horse and you had all these bands that, like, on paper, you're like, what? And then, but you know, that's the scene.
Right. As long as everyone kind of, right. And as long as everyone came from that particular scene where it's just like, oh yeah, like this is a hardcore kid that is now, you know, playing something slightly different. And it's like, okay, you know, you'll be willing to listen as opposed to who is this person? Like, where'd they come from? It's like, yeah, that doesn't, you know, it's a lot harder to break in that way, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, there was a second where I almost joined Vegan Reich.
Really?
So it was just like,
that's really random.
My brain goes there. Yes, it was random. And my brain goes there because of how near and dear to me the cross-pollination of all musical genres and human beings and life is what, that's what I enjoy the most, right? So I've really always been drawn, as long as it's heavy and melodic, I love this and I that I can't describe right now. But, you know, then you have the fringe. That was, you know, some of the, when Lifetime would go up to Syracuse, it would get weird, right? Cause they would be like, we're straight edge and vegan. I was like, good for you. You know, where can I get a pizza with actual cheese on it?
Right.
You know, I mean, I eat plant-based now, but like at the time I didn't care for somebody else's politics. I just only cared about myself. And yeah. And so for like a hot second, I met the Vegan Right guys at the English Beat show in down at 1227 Washington Avenue in St. Louis. And at one point in time, this was before I moved out to play in Lifetime. And I was just, obviously I was looking to get out of Dodge, right?
Yep.
Like, no offense to Dodge, but like St. Louis was not where I was born. It's not where I was gonna, I guess I was just drawn to leave, if you will. And yeah, I almost ended up, doing that. The Hardline, Straight Edge, Vegan Reich. I don't know what those fellows are doing now.
Yeah, that would have been a slightly different path for you, I'm sure.
who knows if I'd be sitting in this car right now talking to you? I have no idea.
It's very true. It's very true.
You need to check out our partners at evilgreed.net. They are an awesome web store solution for bands and record labels, but most importantly, they love to work with a very specific set of bands and record labels to ship you merchandise. I know, it's a very novel concept, but all joking aside, you need to use this promo code, 100 words. It gets you 10% off your entire order. And like I mentioned, they work with a very specific set of bands and record labels. I'll just give you a little overview of some of the bands they work with. How about Drain, Undeath, Incendiary, Creeping Death, Power Trip, Nails, Sun, and they also work with awesome record labels like Triple B, Sergeant House. You get it. If they are doing something that is artistically heavy, and I know that's a very broad brush I'm using, but that's what they do. They're based out of Berlin, Germany, but they ship to here in the United States for a very cost-effective and efficient manner. I've ordered from them before. They are super easy to deal with, and they've got really, really cool stuff. So go to evilgreed.net, use the promo code 100 words. It gets you 10% off your entire order. Have fun. If you like heavy music, you absolutely will find some stuff on their website and order it, and you'll be happy. And essentially, it's like me giving you free merchandise. Okay? So use the promo code 100 words or less. Thank you very much, Evil Greed.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I want to hit on Ink and Dagger in regards to the that the band loomed large and still looms large for me in regards to I saw later iterations of it, not in the era where you were playing, but like, you know, the self-titled Buddyhead record and Fine Art of Original Sin. But from what I can gather an experience from other friends who played in bands that toured with you guys during that era. It's Ink and Dagger was like, to say the wheels were off of the, or the training wheels were off, or whatever metaphor you want to use, where it was like, it was shocking you guys were able to, you know, like get to each show and like just basically function as a band because it seemed so chaotic. And from what I can gather, that is very accurate of your experience, where it was like, oh my gosh, this was like a total poop show. And I can't believe we were able to do what we did.
Yes.
Yes to all that. Okay.
Yes. It was like the height of, and for me personally, it was the height of and the end of my youth gone wild. I'm going to quote Sebastian Bach here, right? So like that 1996 was a crazy year. And the, I don't know if we purposefully, as a band, Ink and Dagger, set out to be the like greatest show on earth, if you will, mm-hmm. or the wildest show on earth, or the worst show on earth, or whatever. Insert your, is it adverb? No, adjective. And you know, like, I don't know if we set out to do it or if it just came from the energy. And like when we were practicing, and you know, it was just growing. There'll probably never be a more, another record wise, even though the tone, like if I listen to it, not like tonally or anything, but like, if you want to talk about like the fine art of sin, the fine art of falling apart, the Ink and Dagger stuff. It was just like a raw nerve.
Yep.
Raw nerve endings across the board. And yeah, we shredded our way through writing those songs, playing Philadelphia. The makeup came out of nowhere. You know, there are some makeup choices that I regret. I don't know where all the video footage is. I played a couple of shows without clothes on. Like it was just insane. And then, So we got in Eric Wareheim's van, right? The Eric Wareheim. Sorry, Eric. I'm not trying to like, you know, submarine your comedy, your Cartoon Network career. But like we got in this van and we went from Philadelphia to Victoria Island, Vancouver. And I don't know how we did it.
Yeah.
I mean, we got pulled over by the cops before we even left Pennsylvania. And then we like looted and destroyed our way through the Midwest, and we made our way all the, you know what I mean? We stopped at my parents' house in St. Louis. I think I had to take a loan from my parents to fix Eric's van to like get home. It was insane.
Sure.
And then when I got back to Philadelphia, I packed up my bags and moved back to Missouri for a little bit to get like to recenter. And then I came back and I met my wife.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like,
yeah,
it was like,
it sounds like a right. It sounds like a fever dream, to be honest.
Totally. It's like I relapsed. You know what I mean? I don't know how else to say it. Like it was. What time is it?
We got.
No, it's good. Sorry.
Yeah.
Not important.
All good.
I'm sitting in the parking lot of Flip Out Productions, which is where my 10-year-old goes to gymnastics, and I'm seeing people come and go, and I'm like, is my kid like standing outside waiting for me? Because I can't see the door right now.
Yeah.
No, but we're good. But yeah, fever dream of 96 for sure. It was crazy. Coming to you in a theater soon, starring, you know, Johnny Depp and some acid trip or something. I don't know. Like, yeah, it was nuts. But I love it. Like I will still listen to that 7-inch and be like, you can just instantly feel the energy and the chaos. And there was like the infighting.
Oh yeah. It's incredible. I mean, as a person who clearly did not play in the band, but observed it. It's incredible. I still listen to that record. No problem. I wanted to hit a little bit on Kid Dynamite was mostly from the fact that once the band started to, you know, put out music, obviously signed to J-Tree, and once like the scuttlebutt, as it were, of like, oh, Kid Dynamite, it's like, you know, a lot of Philly legends, so to speak, you know, are starting to play in this band. And there was this trajectory that you guys were on from a, for lack of a better term, like business perspective, where it's like, oh, these guys are like, they're going to be, you know, a thing. They're going to be a band and, you know, really capture whatever moment is happening. Did you, like, as you guys started to get out there, did you feel that sort of pressure or anticipation that people had expectations going into what you were doing?
Maybe at first, maybe when we were, when Dan and myself were playing without a singer for like 6 months or more, however long we played until finally, you know, Jason came into our lives. But, you know, as far as being like the next Lifetime band or whatever, I mean, there was so much personal baggage between Dan and myself from 94 that, like, you know, it's interesting that we even got off the ground. But we did, right? We were, I don't want to say we're adults. We were able to, as friends, you know, reconnect and move forward. And so any of those outside pressures of like, what will this become? None of that mattered to me because I was able to spend time with my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I've known Dan since 1992. Since I moved out to the East Coast, it's like, again, we just played with each other the other day. It's just, that's all that matters to me is that friendship, and anything that got in the way of it's just stupid and usually my fault. Right. Cause I'm like such a maniac. So for me, none of the, what we were going to live up to mattered. And the trajectory, if you will, to speak to that. I mean, I was band dad for, so you had like a maniac band dad, right? And probably helped to drive, along with, you know, the reception of the music, if you will, that trajectory, all the way into the ground, right? From,
sure.
from where it got to, you know, to Jason saying, this is, you know, this is not what I want to do in my life right now. And then there it was.
Right.
So it was like the star shot high and shined really bright. And then it just, whoop.
Yep.
And, you know, and then it's popped back up on the horizon every now and then, no new material, but we've been able to play and connect with each other. But yeah, I mean, it was wild. I mean, it really, really was wild how, you know, how quickly, and maybe not even how quickly, but just how it became a thing. I mean, Philadelphia itself, I think the city needed, something positive to rally around. That sounds really,
no,
I don't want that to sound egotistical.
No. I see what you're saying. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. It just, you know, I mean, having come from the dark places of Ink and Dagger, and you know, my departure from Lifetime and Ink and Dagger and all that stuff into like, you know, a new hope, if you will.
Yeah.
Chapter four.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
When, clearly you've toured in a lot of different, iterations from, obviously with like Good Riddance, as we'll say, where that was more of a, you know, you joining something that was already, established. And then clearly all the stuff you did with, you know, Lifetime, Kid Dynamite, and obviously the stuff you've done with, you know, Painted Black and Cross Keys. How is your, like, had you always enjoyed touring? Was that kind of a sort of necessary thing you needed to do in order to obviously promote the record? Like, what was your relationship with, like, on touring just in general?
I love touring. I still love driving. If I have a good tune, or if I have a good audiobook, you know, I drove to Connecticut twice, just to pick up some like fireplace parts for the house that we're renovating in Germantown here in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
5 hours one way. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, no problem.
You know, like,
right.
just give me like some road snacks, an audiobook. I'm really comfortable behind the wheel, if you will. And, you know, I'm going on a road trip tomorrow. Just one day road trip. So yeah, I've always loved touring, whether it's big, small, uncomfortable or not. And like I had mentioned earlier, yeah, I can only off the top of my head take a one time, even in that friggin' Ink and Dagger tour in 96, that was just like utter chaos. I don't think I ever got to a point where I was like, ugh. First Lifetime tour, Chris Daly from Texas Is the Reason, he got chicken pox.
Oh, so, no.
This is 92. We drove all the way out, right? We made our way. We used Maximum Rock and Roll's Book Your Own Fucking Life. We drove all the way out to play California. And then Chris got the chicken pox and had to fly home. There was 10 of us in a cargo van that I rented from Sears Budget. And so, you know, he got chicken pox and had to bounce. So that made a little bit more room in the van on the way home.
Yeah.
Nine people. And then we just drove straight back because Resurrection couldn't play any more shows, because that's what Chris was. He was playing drums in Resurrection. But it didn't feel miserable. Well, I was seeing the world, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or part of it. So, yeah, I loved the tour.
Right.
I loved the tour.
That's cool. With the fact that, you know, you have stayed, you know, involved and consistent in regards to your love for punk and hardcore, and like clearly as you get older with, I mean, as evidenced by what you're doing right now, where, you know, you're talking to me about your band as your, you know, child just does gymnastics, like it takes effort as you get older because of all of the extenuating circumstances. What keeps you connected to it? Is it just the fact that you're like, well, this is in my blood, it's in my DNA, I have no choice but to stay connected to it, or is there just something else that you know, keeps you motivated to not only still care about music but obviously still play drums?
This is a great question. I can kind of pinpoint a time in my life where I lost sight of music and drums.
Okay.
And I think that'll bring us around. So when I, right before my second daughter, Matilda, was born, I was playing in a band called Hired Giant. And I lived in Philly and the other three guys lived in New York. And that was tough. You know, music through the, I don't know what year that was. What year? It was 2008, 2009. And when Matilda was born, I had to tell the guys, I was like, I got this job, right? I'm working full time as a, you know, manager, if you will, at Trader Joe's. I got my second kid and I can't drive to Frankensound, which was the rehearsal studio there in North Brunswick, bringing me back to the New Brunswick days. I can't do the band anymore. This is just like breaks my heart. I love the band. I love the guys and the music. And I just felt like I couldn't do it. Right. That, like, talk about extenuating circumstances. So my plate was too full with my commitment. I had to go family first. In which I still, you know, I will jokingly say I'll still pretty much believe in.
Sure.
And so I left the band, and then, I don't know at what point in time after that, but at some point in time after that, I started playing again. I had filled in. Andy from Painted Black had another band called Dark Blue for a while. And sometimes their drummer, was like unavailable doing other things. And so I would fill in. And so at some point in time after I left Hired Giant and didn't really have a band for the longest time, and I started playing again, I had one of these holy shit moments where I was like, I didn't realize what was missing. Like a part of me had been like turned off. It was like a huge part of me. And I had prioritized all this other stuff in my life, and not that it didn't matter, but it certainly didn't mean as much to me as music. And so that I like had that, like that epiphany where I was just like, okay, I can't not play. So then how do I play with my plate being so full? How do I get myself in a situation where I can play the music I love and still feel like I'm not a deadbeat dad, or that, you know what I mean? Like, how do I do all that? Long story short, I just found a way, by, you know, I filled in for this guy's band. I played it for Dark Blue, and I guess I've been at Cross Keys now for about 5 years. I always say I got tricked into being into the band.
Sure.
But it's like the perfect, it's like the perfect harmony of the kind of music I want to play, the type of people I like to be around, and the commitment level, right? It is, and maybe I'm just able to more now with my children being older, and my professional life being in a weirdly less chaotic from a scheduling perspective place, I'm able to balance it all. So here is 2023, right? Just approved the test pressing, talking about trying to get down to Fest and everything we're going to do in between now and then. And it doesn't feel overwhelming. And I don't also feel like I'm, you know, I feel like I still understand, I feel like I relatively still understand my children.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I'm plugged in. I was playing Legos this morning. You know, I was talking to, you know, my ballerina about, she's reading The Outsiders right now, you know, having a conversation on the way over to the studio for that. And like, so I'm as plugged in as I'm ever going to be.
Right.
If you will. And I can still make the time to, you know, we practice most every single Tuesday, Cookies practices unless something comes up, you know? And, like I said, over a year ago, we started to cobble together this record, recorded the music in January, vocals in March, mixed in like July, if you will. Yeah. And it might finally come out. Well, not might finally come out. It looks like it's, you know, it's gonna come out, and that's great. And I can, and I got it. I feel like I got it made.
Yeah.
will we go on tour?
Yeah.
Define tour. You know
right.
what I mean?
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't know.
Well, actually,
it feels good.
Right. And that dovetails nicely with the last question I was going to ask you in regards to, you know, being connected to quote unquote real life, because I do think that there is that idea that when you get on this treadmill of touring and being so active with your band and barely home and really not experiencing anything that most people do in order to derive the material that they need to fuel their art. How is it that, you know, your kids interact with you, obviously playing in a band, like caring about this music that is, you know, less than conventional for probably their friends, dads and moms and stuff like that. How do they interact with you in regards to that?
We have two dogs, my lovely wife, and three daughters, and the dogs don't care. They interrupted my listening to the test pressing the other day with their barking and they're running around.
Yeah.
So I had to go up and take my record off my turntable and go up to the little suitcase turntable in my daughter's room and shut the door and try to finish listening to this thing. And so my youngest, she's whatevs, you know, she's like, oh, have fun, better practice. She's 10. And she's like, yeah, do your thing. My 13-year-old, she is like wearing all my wife's old Kid Dynamite stuff these days, t-shirts, sweatshirts. She's like the, I'm stoked that my dad's in a band, that he was in this band. And, you know, my two oldest are musically inclined. They can both sing really well, and they do some stage acting, and they love music. Are they listening to Suicidal Tendencies? No. But you know, they'll appreciate the more, like Olivia Rodrigo, she's got some edgy material, and I was like, oh, this stuff's pretty cool, you know. So they don't shy away from it completely. Some of the heavier stuff they're not that into, but
right.
What I mean to say is, like, I feel like my middle daughter has an appreciation for and understands to some level kind of my musical career, for lack of a better term. And she's on board and she's totally supportive, and we talk about it all the time, and she's excited for the, you know, the new Cross Keys record to come out. She actually came to the studio because we got her a guitar a couple of years ago, and she's self-taught herself guitar and ukulele. And she came by when we were tracking guitars, played cards, and listened and learned. So she's, you know, one might think with three daughters that I have a band at home, but I definitely, that's not the case, right? That's not happening.
Right.
But I have one who's like, definitely, she's my ballerina, but she's also like, she's like my rock and roller a little bit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Rock and roll ballerina.
She's checking out what you got going on. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And then my 15-year-old Madeline, she's kind of, I don't know, she's always got her nose in a book, or she's writing her own books. And how would you say it? She can see the joy that it gives me and is happy when I go and do it. It's funny. None of my kids have seen me play live yet.
Oh.
Because there's not been, yeah, there's just not been, you know, Kid Dynamite did some reunion shows at certain times in their age, but like they were really young, and I didn't bring my kids to shows because I really wasn't going to shows as I was like having really small kids.
Right.
But Kroskies is playing this festival in Manayunk on May 6th of this year, the Sing Us Home Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like right next to my house, basically. The kids can like, they can hop a lift and, you know, see the band play outdoors. It's not a punk festival necessarily. It's just a, you know, it's a music, it's a well curated music festival. And, we'll probably, you know, maybe tweak the set list a little bit and play some of the just more straight up rock and roll. Not that we have rock and roll songs. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but anyway, if there was a time for the kids to come and see the band play in the right environment. Also my wife doesn't want to necessarily have to like herd cats at a music festival. So she's like,
right.
Yeah. Bringing the kids to see you play. Like sounds not I, like, she's like, I've seen you play like a zillion times. I don't care. She doesn't not care, but she's like, yeah, that's,
yeah. She's like, I've been there. I've done that.
Figure that out.
Right.
I don't want to be the,
yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want to have to do that with three kids. Like that's not my thing. But this festival, I think might be the first chance they all come and to come see us play. And I can imagine that the two oldest will be excited and want to maybe see some other bands or maybe even want to watch the entire set. And I can imagine, honestly, my 10-year-old Mamie, she might just be like, can I stay home with Grammy and have ice cream sandwiches and watch, you know, Star versus the Forces of Evil. Like I don't, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
She's not, she doesn't care.
Yeah.
She doesn't care. I don't want to put words in her mouth. I would never do that to her. I would, but yeah.
Right.
That's
right.
My long winded tale of like,
how the kids interact with your music.
Their,
yeah.
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 I mean, Matilda's really into, Catcher listening to All Roy's Revenge. When I say Catcher, I mean, she loves that album. And I don't know if she's adventured beyond that. Right. But, you know, every now and then they'll hear a song and they'll be into the melody and the lyrics. And then we'll go, you know, pile through the records. And, you know, there's
right.
a while there where she was listening to that daily. And I was like, all right, this, now we're talking. And then she'd put it down and picked up, you know, whatever artist that I'm not really drawn to is the best way I could say that.
Yep.
So,
yeah, that's cool. Well, Dave, thank you so much for letting me bounce around your brain in regards to all the fun stuff you've done behind the kit and in front of the kit in life. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been, this was a fun one.
I appreciate that.
Splendid. Thank you very much, Mr. Dave Wagonshoots, for hanging out. Like I said, I just really like his last name, so that's why I'm saying it so much. Anyways, thank you to him. Please check out his new band, Cross Keys. Like I said, their debut full length called Believes in You is out on May 5th on Dead Satellite Records. I've listened to it. It is a very good romp in the punk rock / hardcore vein. You get it. You know, you've undoubtedly, if you've heard one of Dave's bands, you most likely will be the fan of his next band and his band after that, because he travels in the same universe in the most positive way possible. But anyways, that's what we got. Next week, I have a great, in-depth, and insightful discussion with, frankly, one of my favorite bands / artists around right now, and quite possibly one of my favorite band names ever, Haley Butters from Absinthe Father. And I'm Absinthe. You want to hit that th, because if you say Absinthe Father, it's not as funny. Absinthe Father. But tripped across her. I can't exactly remember where, but we have so many mutual friends. And I was like, dude, Haley, would you be interested in this? I would love to have a discussion with you. And she was willing to do that. And we did. So that's what I got next week. Until then, please be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.